Gerhardt's back.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
From NJ1015.com, this is the new Jim Gerhardt Podcast.
Here we are again. Once again, Jim Gerhardt, Bob Williams, I almost forgot. But I think one of the big things today, this is Friday.
Special Friday edition.
Special Friday, but we're going into this weather catastrophe, really. That is, I've never seen anything like this before, I believe, and I've been around, obviously, quite a long time, that it would get this hot, this sticky, this, what do you call it? Feel like walk out of the house in the morning. It's like somebody took a pool table cover and dipped it in warm water and threw it all, wrapped me up in it. We usually have been going out, take the dogs for a walk an hour every morning.
Right.
And a couple of days earlier in the week, we tried it, and it just didn't work. I tell you, it takes an effect on your health, that and the allergens that are like in the air.
Yeah, Dan Zaro says this is the hottest we've seen in New Jersey in 7 years. Hasn't been 100 or above since 2012.
Oh, that recently?
Yeah,
oh,
seven years.
So, I don't know how this is connected with that phenomenon, this heat wave. Oh, it's supposed to have a real feel today of 106.
Yeah, something like
Saturday, tomorrow, 112.
Right. And many events have been canceled or rescheduled, but one event that's still on as we join you this morning is the Haskell, the big horse race, the big prize race over at Monmouth tomorrow. That's still going on, and I'm a little bit surprised. Maybe that will change, but the Haskell is on for now.
The PETA people will step into that and say that this is somehow horse abuse. Well, last week we got accused of beating a dead horse, so the animal rights people didn't like that. We had to explain that was an expression about pushing grip.
Right.
You know, I think what I'm going to do with the grip.
You got your grip hat today. Yes.
Yeah, but I'm going to take the G off.
Yeah.
And I think the RIP is probably appropriate.
Rest in peace.
Right now. Yeah. After that one fizzled after 26 years. So people apparently didn't want to get rid of incumbent politicians. So I have to work on something else now.
Happy with the status quo, I guess.
Okay, now you live in the northern part of the state. I'm more or less in the southern part. The lake pollution that's going on. Lake Hopatcong, big one, first of all. And now it's...
And Greenwood Lake, which is on the New York-New Jersey border.
Is this morning pretty much closed for any practical purposes.
For the algae bloom, and apparently the bloom up at Greenwood Lake is even more severe than the one that developed last couple of weeks at Lake Hopatcong.
So they're urging people, the expression that they use, which I wrote down, was do not come in contact with the water.
Yeah, I mean, so you're talking swimming?
You wonder, though, is that a harbinger of things to come? Because the water quality all over the country and the world is getting to be pretty ridiculous. I had a friend who went to Belize, which is supposed to have pristine, pure water, you know, you see in the tourist pictures. And he said it was, when they were there, the water was so polluted off this tropical paradise that they couldn't go in the water. But anyway, with Greenwood, they're talking about you can boat.
Yes.
But don't come into direct contact with the water.
No splashing or really absorbing. I mean, you may touch the water a little bit, but
picture of people putting on hazmat suits and getting in their boat. I don't know how you pull that.
It may be that extreme, and if you are fishing, they say don't keep the fish. Put the fish back. So kind of weird.
Well, the fish would probably be happy to be kept.
Yeah.
But put it in your chest with clean water.
But I can speak from knowing Lake Hopatcong, a lot of businesses are affected. And this is the peak season for tourism. And it's New Jersey's largest lake. And it's just so sad that this is happening now. And there was an article I read, one of the local Tap Into Roxbury guy Fred Aughn, who used to write for the Daily Record, published an article yesterday saying that the levels are improving, but not significant enough that they can lift any of the bans on the swimming or anything at Lake Hopatcong.
Now, we've asked you, please, to comment, questions, comments.
Right.
You know, just nice things, or poke a stick in our cage, whatever turns you on this morning. Right. So let's see a few people who have. Let's go down to Antonio, who says, don't you think it should say GRAP, get rid of all politicians? I did that last week,
yeah,
a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
But I added something. I wanted to make it GRASP, get rid of all sitting politicians. So just, you know, to make it the acronym even. Yeah. So, yeah, we're working on that. Thank you, Antonio. I appreciate that. Richard Tuveld. Hey, Richard. Richard says, I know that every senator has to take an oath of office to support and defend the Constitution. But I've never heard of any constitution if they violate the oath. Well, that's not surprising, Richard, because yeah, politicians
don't go into the penalty
box. The politicians have put locks on the penalty box as far as they're concerned. See, this is a great catch-22. People come up with all of these ideas. We have to change that. We have to change that. Yes, they're great ideas. But in order to change them, the people who are causing the problem in the first place have to do the changing, and they're not about to. And so, again, if you want to change rules for decorum in the hen house, you can't unless the foxes agree to it.
Right.
And the foxes are quite happy with ruling the hen. So, yeah, there are so many good ideas. There's so many things out there. So many people have written, and I feel bad about this, great books. And you see sometimes on television and the like, programs with wonderful ideas, but you can't do it because they all are locked up. Any change is locked up in the lawmaking process. And the lawmaking process is run by people whose main agenda is their own career. They're not going to change everything.
Now, I think you've coined the phrase careerism.
Well,
political careerism.
Political careerism.
Another
this is where we have to stop. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let me do something. Don't let me forget term limits. You brought that up before, and it sounds great. One way to stop political careerism is don't let the, do not let the elected officials hang out, but just so long.
Yeah. Why do some offices have term limits and some don't?
There's right off the bat is what I had just talked about. Right. In order to change that, it has to be legislatively changed. And that has to be done by the very people you're trying to get rid of. They don't want to get rid of it. They're going to hang on with all fours because this elected office is their key to the treasury. But, let me get back to Lou. Could you clear that on the left there just a bit? I think that's the same question, right? Pretty much the same question. Okay, term limits sounds great. You can't serve more than 2 years, or you can't serve 6 years in the Senate.
As the Senate, yes.
And the president, no more than 2 terms. Now, in order to change that, they are talking about first, you're not going to change it by going to the Congress and saying, hey, how about limiting your trip on the gravy train here? So that doesn't work. So people talk about a constitutional amendment. Here is the problem. Don't let them do that. Going back a few years, and this would be in the Corzine administration, there was talk about a constitutional convention in New Jersey, and the purpose of it was to discuss and perhaps deal with education funding. You remember that?
Yes.
Well, the legislature passed all the laws, everything that was necessary to set up the constitutional convention, but then it fizzled out. Why did it fizzle? They never had it. Because people found out, and the word got out, that once they do that, and these people, they will appoint their own delegates to this. Yeah. And so once you open that up, you cannot limit it. As I understand it, you can't limit it to one issue. The whole Constitution is open.
So you're not opening it just for that purpose, certain issue?
Apparently they found out they couldn't do it just to fix one issue. It was wide open, and you know what's going to happen when you let these people tamper with the Constitution.
Here comes Pandora's box, right?
Well, yeah. Federally, it's the same way if you want to get into term limits. Don't do that, because the Constitution, at this point in our history with the situation that prevails, the only friend we have is the Constitution.
Right.
And, of course, the left is doing everything they possibly can to try to get their toe in the door to change that.
To manipulate it for their
favor. To manipulate that. But be very careful with that. Talk about a convention. I think there was a constitutional convention to deal with the fifth article, I believe it was, which is terms and a lot of other things. But hang on to that. Don't let that happen.
Yeah.
Let's see. Anything... float your boat today, dude. You're a transportation expert.
Yeah, Just New Jersey Transit, they've had their delays all summer because of the engineering availability. And it seems like we get more canceled trains on weekends, coming out of weekends, Mondays or Fridays. And if you're an engineer, when are you going to take off during the summertime? You're going to make it a 3-day weekend, right? So we get a lot of canceled trains on Mondays.
These people are making a couple hundred thousand grand a year. Yeah. Most of us would put up with a bit of inconvenience for that. And but I guess it's easy if you're in the right
organization. And it's hard to understand as a commuter why an engineer would not work if they don't have enough employees. Why wouldn't you just sop up that extra overtime?
Well, that's
and,
they
and
do
the extra shifts. But apparently a lot of these engineers are refusing to do it. And therefore, the trains don't run.
They have a lot of trouble. Almost every day you see something has happened with something broken. Yeah. I think my favorite one was, and I don't remember exactly what line it was on, they said that the service had been canceled because the conductor had dropped the stick with the carrot on it and the mule was squatting down on the track. So they had a little bit of difficulty with that.
Are you noticing more this time of year? Well, I know I am. I'm noticing that a lot of out-of-state plates in New Jersey driving on the roads, unfamiliar. And there could be some correlation of the several accidents we've had over the last couple of weeks. We've had some very, very serious accidents on some of these, on the turnpike. A couple of interstates have been closed for some wild truck accidents. And there's no real proof yet, but I think that has something to do with the unfamiliarity of the drivers.
I don't know. What popped into my head here was one time I was coming to work at the radio station, which is you get off Route 295 to come down here on the local roads. And I was about to turn into a road that led to the station right in a suburban area, very heavily populated. There was this huge truck sitting there. He was just sitting there in the intersection with his emergency lights flashing. And I got out of my car and went up to see what was happening. And the driver got out. Now, the driver spoke not one word of English. And he was... I assumed that what he wanted to know was, how do I get the hell out of here?
He made a wrong turn.
Yeah, I mean, he's right in somebody's neighborhood sitting there in the cul-de-sac with a huge truck. And I tried to remember enough pidgin Spanish from high school to tell him, I mentioned 295 and I figured, dos, whatever it is, cinco, and he nodded. But anyway, we managed to communicate. I tried to help him back around and get out of there. So there may be some credence to what you say, because here was a driver who had probably driven for many, many hours, and he took a wrong turn, because sometimes these signs can be deceptive, especially on 295, where north is east and east is west. And
they changed it around again last year.
Yeah. But it's a possibility. I know in New Jersey, they give the driver's license test in 21 different languages. Now, there are people driving. You'd be surprised to hear this, but there are people in this country illegally and who don't have the credentials or the training or the understanding of the language.
Right.
I know that's shocking for you to hear something like that.
Be still.
So it's a possibility. Last week, something I want to do, and it keeps gnawing at me. I want to do a piece here before the morning's over, Fair Play for Colonel Sanders.
Okay, tell me more.
Colonel Sanders, the Kentucky Fried Colonel Sanders, is presented now in commercials like the great horse's butt of the whole world.
Well, let me see if I can do an imitation. Hey, this is Colonel Sanders. Oh, come on over here. $5 Philip.
That's not quite as bad as the actors or supposed actors who are doing it. Colonel Sanders was a man of amazing achievement. Now, if they want to sell the chicken, this is fine, but don't use him and try to do that, because it is demeaning a person.
Right.
And anyway, you'll see when I get to, I happen to know him, or at least at one time.
Harlan Sanders.
I spent some time with Harlan Sanders when he was beginning, when he first brought his product east. I was working at a radio station. I was in college down in Virginia, and he had come in to demonstrate this product to a local drive-in restaurant, not a chain. I think Lenny had three stores there, drive-ins, at the time, and they were interested in the product and selling the product. So here comes the old man, as he called himself, in, and he's got a white pickup truck, Ford pickup truck. This would have been about 1960 vintage or something like that. And in the back, he's got these burlap sacks, a bunch of burlap with his root, his herbs and spices. But anyway, they did a lot of advertising on the radio station where I worked. And our sales manager at the station worked kind of as the advertising agent for this chain, the Lenny's Restaurants. And so I was invited over for the demonstration. Oh, my God, could an old man cook? That would, if you had this product, this chicken, and he also made mashed potatoes and gravy, if you had this made by Colonel Harlan Sanders, that was the lasting memory of the supreme culinary ecstasy of life. And now you see what's happened to it. But what they've done to him, okay, that's kind of a side thing, but I keep keeps saying, do this. Tell him about the old man. What a wonderful old man he was.
I presume he didn't have the white suit and the
Yes, he did.
And the bow line.
Oh, absolutely. He wore it all the time. And he kept insisting over and over in his expression, I want my mug on all the advertising. I want my mug on there. And he dressed the part.
And now they've made him a caricature of himself.
And he was the first person I ever ran into who had a smoking phobia. We all smoked at the time. You know, everybody did in 1960 or whatever it was. And but you couldn't around him. He would get absolutely furious. But anyway, he was a remarkable man. And I remember him very fondly, and also I had great respect for him. But we'll talk about that a bit. On the political scene, probably nationally, this coming 2020 election may be the most important election in our history, because you have sides divided so completely, and the tide is tipping age-wise with the voting public.
Right.
And you have the older voters from, I guess there are a few World War II people around, Korean veterans like me, you know, there's some of us around still kicking around. And then that was up when things changed, and that you go through the boomer generation, right, was pretty much allied with that.
Right.
And then you get in now to the current generation. What do they call it? The millennials, then the X and whatever it is, generations after that, who have been indoctrinated entirely differently, both in the home and in school. Mm-hmm. We were taught, for example, going back before that, that this is a wonderful country, a great country. We should have ultimate respect for it. And we had to, because we saw all of our friends and our people dying for it. So you weren't going to question that. All of a sudden now, the entire culture has turned to an ideology that starts with a premise that it's a very wicked, evil country. And you've got generations now who are trained in that, or ideologically start with that. And so I think this is getting down into these two camps. I kind of picture it like the biblical battle of Armageddon, the field of Megiddo, the good on one side, all the bad lined up on the other. Now, who's good and who's bad here? I don't know. You could flip a coin in many instances. But the lines are drawn. And this election may determine if there is enough energy and strength left in the traditional America to counter the new America.
It's frightening. Like you say, we're at a tipping point. The voters, the majority of voters, are transitioning from the boomers to the next generation.
Exactly.
So it's, you got to wonder what everyone, the younger people, are thinking.
Well, you got such a difference here. Arnold Toynbee, the great British historian, had this history of challenge and response in the rise and fall of civilizations. And his theory was, which pretty sound, is that civilizations grow, they become great while they're responding to challenge. Mm-hmm. Once they have met the challenge, they start going downhill. They start sitting around gathering stuff and being content and apathetic. And then eventually they will fall. Now, again, going back, I guess, earlier, the Depression. Well, this country, first of all, you had the Revolution. You had developing a whole new country, the challenge of that, the challenge of opening up the rest of the, opening up the West, which people argue about it. That. But anyway, that was there. Then you get the Industrial Revolution and adapting to that. And then you go into the Great Depression, or World War I, a big war, the Great Depression. Then you have World War II. Then you get the Cold War. So there's always been a challenge. Suddenly, the challenge seems to be over, by and large. And so everybody in those generations had known that challenge, had been a part of that challenge, had felt it, and had sort of lived their lives and thought accordingly. After that, the end, which roughly is kind of like the end of the Vietnam War, in a sense, and the new generation coming in, the beginning of the millennials, it's entirely different because the only challenge, the only fear that they've had is that the power will go out and they won't be able to text.
Mm.
Or some, you know, similar kind of a thing. There's no challenge has been demanded of them. Now, this is by and large, obviously not everybody, because there are still a lot of people who are living by the old standards.
Yeah. Still
young
of,
people.
Still a lot
military,
of good people
military,
out there. Yeah,
for example.
Absolutely. Still a lot of good people out there.
Speaking of military, I've got to do this. The John Bazelon Day in Raritan is coming up.
In mid-September.
And this goes back. John Bazelon was a hero almost beyond compare in World War II. He was a young man from Raritan, New Jersey, who went into the Marines. And he went, he was fighting in the Pacific. He got there. I believe it was Iwo Jima, the first battler. He won the Congressional Medal of Honor and a couple other honors. No other enlisted man had ever done that. Mm. And this was millions of military people. He stood out that much. So he was brought home by the military, and he was used by the government to promote war bond sales, which they had at that time. So he went around and toured like the rock stars do day. He was, I guess, a star in his day. However, he wasn't satisfied with that. He wanted to go back and be back with his men, his people. And so he went back. And then I believe it was Guadalcanal. Now, please forgive me if I get these islands wrong, but he eventually went back. And the upshot of it was that he was killed in that. But he would have gotten posthumously the Medal of Honor again. And he did things that nobody's ever done before. And he was a New Jersey person, and second generation Italian. And in Raritan, they celebrate every year the John Bazelon Day. And so, in honor of John Bazelon, this morning, as you can see.
Yeah.
I am Natalie attired in a Marine shirt.
Semper Fi.
Semper Fi. I was never in the Marines. My son is. Hmm. And so I can legitimately wear this Marine clothing.
You drive through Raritan, Somerset Street, you see the big Bazelon statue.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, what, 75 years later, and they're still honoring him.
I wonder if this year, and God forbid this happened, we don't get some of the loony left protesting. That here is a hero who was a hero under the flag of a nation that some of these loonies out on the left consider to be a very bad thing, a terrible thing, a fascist country, as the fascist, anti-fascist said in Portland when they beat up the old man with a flag on his hat.
But I'll tell you, I wouldn't want to mess with the people of Raritan. They are very, very proud. And
they should be
so,
proud.
John
they
Bazelon.
Should be proud. You know, an interesting thing, and Steve Trevelise, you know, the station tonight, he wrote a piece, really an interesting piece about that. And how he approached it was he was talking about Bazelon and his own family, his own parents or grandparents, Bazelon's. And Bazelon comes from a generation when they came to this country as, and I'll try to paraphrase Steve, that they were not given public assistance. They were not given a free education. They were not given free medical care. They were not given, well, I guess in New Jersey lately, the in-state tuition thing, which is a small matter. None of that. He said, at best, if they were lucky, they were given a shovel and told, go make something out of this. And they did.
Right.
And they did. In New Jersey, there is a very strong Italian-American population. And one time we were talking about that. They seem to be, as a group, and you can't make hard boundary lines around these ethnic groups, they seem to be much more patriotic, if I can use that now without having a demonstration outside. You're a jingoist, you're a jingoist. You don't believe in open borders. No, I don't. But I never made a secret about that. But the reason that was given, and I asked you about that on the air one day, why do you see more like Italian-American families flying flags and being involved in patriotic organizations? And they said it is simply because this means more to us. This would go for any of the immigrant waves around the turn of the last century, Polish-Americans, you know, even Asian-Americans. Right. It would go for them, too, but they recognize what they got when they came to this country.
And they respected it.
And they respected it.
And they followed the due process to enter this country.
Absolutely. And it made the country the greatest country that ever there was, the greatest amount of freedom, the greatest affluence.
The infrastructure was built on the backs and the sweat of all the immigrants that came in.
Absolutely. And they did it, and here we are. And they built, and now it's in the process of being torn down by people who never had to face anything like that. And I don't know what would be the biggest challenge a millennial will face. Is what is the quickest route to being a rock star or getting rich? I'm told that they have surveys in college. What do you want to be when you get out? What is your ambition? Well, it's to get rich or be a rock star. Very few people say, I want to be a humanitarian. I want to save people. So anyways, I did want to mention the Barcelona. The day comes up in September.
Yes.
But there was a story which prompts us to talk about this. It was a story that a town in Italy has named a street after John Barcelona, the American hero. We have no street here. So I don't know why not. They named street. You know, there's an interesting thought right there. The left wants to change the name. This is the loony left. I'm not talking about liberals. I just separate that. Those who are hanging way out there trying destabilize the country. The left of lefts. They are talking about changing place names of anything that a name of anyone whose life occurred, no matter what, at a time when there was slavery. So all these names will have to be changed, even later, when they figured, okay, there was oppression going on, therefore take these names down, all the presidents, all the people. And in the process, this is to a certain extent being done, where they can get away with this, change school names and the like, and then names of places. And I just wonder if the pendulum were to swing back the other way, you might see the name of Barcelona Street or some of the great heroes. I don't know where it's going right now. I wish I did. I sit and ponder that a lot, sitting on the veranda of stately Gearhart Manor.
I'll tell you.
Sipping a julep. And
it's a great day to do
and
that.
Trying to forget it all.
I'll tell you, and on this line, you want to feel good about this country and be thankful for what you have. And when you think you're having a bad day, go watch the movie Grapes of Wrath.
Oh, yeah.
Grapes of Wrath. Yeah. That happened to be running the other night on the Classic Movie Channel.
Oh, really?
And
Henry Fonda.
I've seen that a few times, and you really want a dose of reality and just a real good check. You just look at what those people had to do back in the 30s, where their land was taken by the government, and they had nothing.
Well, and it was taken by the weather, too.
Yeah,
the
great because dust of the Dust Bowl and all that.
But there have been some excellent documentaries on that. But people see what this former what these generations went through.
Yeah.
And consequently, what this country meant to them.
Yes.
And now you get people who come. See, the great wave of immigrants were escaping something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some immigrants now are also. But many, I don't know how many, what the percentage would be, but a lot of them aren't. They're coming here for the bucks, or they're coming here because, easy pickings, or they're coming here to hide out until the revolution, whatever they're coming for. But people who came here in that great wave of immigration and traditionally was to escape something and coming to something better. And they do appreciate that because they found it. Now, there is no challenge.
You walk across the border.
You come into the country and the first thing you do is start trying to change it to be like the country you say you're escaping from. And make it like that. So the so-called, what is the politics of identity? We want to make it like that. So it's a highly complex thing. And as I said, I sometimes feel bad. There are so many authors. In New Jersey, we have one, Steve Malanga, who writes for the Jersey Journal, which
I think is
part of the Star Ledger complex. Brilliant analyses of these things that are going on. So they don't seem to be going anywhere. That's what I was talking about beating the dead horse.
Right.
So I'm going to stop beating the dead horse. And in answer to the person, who is that? I'm looking at names. Yeah, I got carried away and I wasn't looking at the screen. So
perfectly understandable.
Try to explain what we're doing. If we weren't doing this, we would be sitting on a park bench Right. Complaining about the government.
Right. You,
with a bunch of old people.
And a couple of mint juleps.
Well, this would be nice, too. But I can see us sitting around in, what is it, green leisure suits with white belts and white shoes, you know, that bit. And maybe a little shoestring tie.
Yeah, Rappaport.
Yes, yes, exactly. So this is the YouTube version of that. But again, the conversations, and we'd like to know what interests you. So many things, really, I think.
You had told me this morning you wanted to talk about who was your favorite and most respected New Jersey governor.
Yeah, I don't know if we have time to get into that, but I thought that would be interesting to do at some point. In New Jersey, the governor is always the center of a lot of attention. He is probably the central point of everything that goes on in the state. Kind of like the mayor in a city is always, every time, every day, there's something around that because of the way the demographics and the geography, the way the state's made up. And so people are very aware of governors, except young people, for some reason, in college, in the surveys, they find out that most of them, I think 50% at Rider University, seniors had no idea who the governor was.
Who the governor
was.
Is, yeah.
Yeah. Well, worse than that, going a couple of years ago, they had a survey at Vanderbilt University, which is a great university. It's in Tennessee, Chattanooga, I think. And they asked simple things of graduate students, like, here's a map. I point out, where is New York City? And they couldn't find it.
Ever since GPSs and Google Maps, people don't know north, you know, south, east, or west.
Well, anyway, so, but things that you would like to talk about, but the governors, yeah, I think we all have, how many governors? I counted back 8, wasn't it, starting back with Florida? I never knew Governor
Since the station went on the air in 1990.
The station's going to have its 30th birthday
March 1st,
next year.
2020.
That's a long time.
It sure is.
Very few radio stations in history have had programming that lasted that long. Now, the phenomenon about New Jersey 101.5 is that it got better every year. Right. It got bigger every year.
And the radio station's been nominated once again for the Marconi Award for the News Talk Station of the Year.
Absolutely. Well, it certainly has been the News Talk Station of the Year. I mentioned this before. We had Walter Sabo, one of the leading consultants in the business, who was consulting us. And he did a lot of talk radio stations and other things. Matter of fact, Walter was the, I don't know if I should say this, he's the author of Shark Week. Oh. He did promotion for the Discovery Channel. He consulted with them, came up with that. But he said that this radio station, all in all, has the most intelligent audience of any of the talk radio stations in the country that he worked with. And this certainly has been a big, big help.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, let's defer the governor thing because that's a little game we can play. I have my favorites that I've talked about before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You certainly do. Yeah. Okay. I've known every governor from Florio up to this current governor I've never met. And no doubt probably won't. So... last week I got off. There's so many things to talk about. Someday we'll get an all-night show. We can sit here. And nobody's out there but a few truck drivers. I just want to mention this. And I can't get into it, but please just understand what I'm trying to say. We had last week some stories of tragedies involving dogs, pit bulls. And I had mentioned that I had very tragically, and I feel terrible about this, had to find another home for my much-beloved pit bull, Holly, who was the sweetest dog I ever had, who all of a sudden, at about 6 years of age, nobody knows why, can figure this out, suddenly decided that she wanted to kill dogs.
Right.
And just went after our Doberman mother, Holly, or Mia, who... we don't know what started it, but once she did, and once blood was drawn, it's like Holly could not back off every opportunity she had. And it was scary because we have kids in the neighborhood, and I couldn't live with it. But I'd mentioned this last week and talked about that, but one thing that led to that, I'm going to propose, won't get anywhere with it, of course, I would like to propose that dog owners have to undergo some kind of training before you can have a dog, especially a large dog, that they have to undergo training and be licensed just like the dogs are.
That's interesting.
And the reason is, and this is not because of anybody's ill will, because I'm the most guilty person in the world, and I feel terrible sometimes. I really feel that I had treated dogs not badly. If people came by and looked, they said, this is the best treated dog in the world. I'd get an award from PETA for they were housed, they were treated, they were cared for. But I was missing the whole point of what a dog needs. And I think this causes a lot of the trouble. People get a dog, and a dog is a thing. It's not a sentient personality.
Yes.
I mean, it is to some people, but essentially it's a thing. And you get the dog, and you don't think any more about that. And I was thinking of my Akita I got one time, and Pookie, because Pookie looked like Soupy Sales. Remember the hand puppet Pookie, who stuck her head up behind the door and got a pie in the face?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, this was a sweet, sweet dog. I got her, adopted her. And for young dog, but one problem was, and Akitas get to be big dogs, and I had two Rottweilers at the time as well, but I'd never thought about this, but Pookie would, when she got excited, would pee. Mm-hmm. And in the house, and I had new carpeting in the house. And so after a while of running out of, I keep running to the store to buy white vinegar and Nature's Miracle, you know that, and scrubbing, I said, okay, well, this is simple. I'll just have Pookie live outside. Well, now that I should not have done. What the alternative was, I'm not sure right now. Now, Pookie, when she was living outdoors, became an escape artist.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, well, Pookie's fine, but she can't escape. So I had to put her on a long chain so she had a lot of room to move, but nevertheless was on that. But what I was missing was that here was a very happy dog. Dogs are made to be pack animals. They like the pack. Your family will be the pack if that's it, if you play it that way. But if you do not let the dog become a part of the pack, except on some occasions, it's very sad for the dog. And I feel terribly about doing that. The upshot of it was that one night on a chain, it was a thunderstorm. And everybody in the house was comfy. And I said, well, Pookie's fine. We got this nice house for her. She's got food. Your house is insulated, you know, and everything. But it turned out that Pookie was trying desperately to get either in the house or out or somewhere. And she climbed, I don't know how, a stockade fence, jumped down on the other side, you know, choked by the collar. And that was the end. I think I have nightmares. Well, not nightmares because I'm awake, but daymares, feeling very bad about that. But I think, and that's just one aspect, that the dog has its own genetics, its own instincts. And it's not like something you just get and say, hey, this is such a nice dog, I'll go out and pat it every now and again. And I'm talking about good people.
Right.
I thought this should be the happiest dog in the world. Turned out that it wasn't quite that way. So maybe some education would be good. Okay.
But I'll tell you, but even in this weather, you're going to make sure that your dog's got enough water, your cats. This is dangerous stuff for animals, too.
Our dogs are smarter than we are. We usually take the dogs for a walk. The custom has been, we have the three dogs. We have the mother, Dobie, and we have Gibson and Manfred, the youngs. And we, every morning about 7 o'clock, we'd hit the road and take an hour walk with the dogs. Up until, I think it was the day before yesterday. So we get out there after about a half hour, man, everybody's choking and come back and the dogs are dragging. Mm. And the weather, this bad weather, this weather the way it's been, even the dogs now, we don't walk them. We can't these days for our own health reason. But the dogs, when they're put out for exercise, these dogs are used to running. They're not very happy in a yard or in a house. They won't exert themselves beyond a point. They're very, very smart. They will end up getting under a tree and just standing there.
Yeah.
Or else you look out the door and here's one's decided he's going to raise his leg and do something on a chaise long. And I'll be, okay, no, get him back in here.
Well, thankfully, I don't have that problem with the bulldog. Mm. He walks like about maybe 15 feet outside a hot day. He turns around and comes right back.
Yeah.
And we throw a couple of ice cubes at him. This dog loves ice cubes.
Yeah.
I mean, and apparently it's good for their teeth. And the dog loves it. It's very refreshing and stuff.
I didn't get around to Colonel Sanders because it would take a while. But I tell you, please, for me, when you see these commercials for that product, and I'm not criticizing the product, although, as I said, if you ever had this product cooked by Colonel Sanders, ooh, it was beautiful. But we'll have to do that on another time because it would take some time. One thing, I got to have my loony left story of the week. Now, this will lead to something else, so I have to be very careful. See, what happens is, after you've done this enough, anything that comes up, you say anything with New Jersey attached to it, you get 16 memories. It's like in the old days, they had these it's like an assembly line with index cards on it. Remember that?
Yes.
And you'd hit it, and ones that were relative would drop down. And well, I'd have a whole basket full just from one thing in New Jersey. And it's not a New Jersey story, but this stuff does go on here in England. Now, if you want to find some consolation, the world of political correctness, for those of it who hate it as much as I do, you can be consoled by the fact that in England, it apparently is getting worse. Here is a story from England, and you see these things. A doctor, a physician. Now, they have socialized medicine, or what do they call it now, the one plan, or whatever they call it in this right. country that the left is pushing. Ultimately, we will have, once we get to that point.
Right. One-payer system.
One-payer system, whatever it is. Where they have that, and the doctors, I would think that you should be delighted if a person decides to become a doctor, because it's unlikely they're going to get rich as they can possibly do if they play their cards right here. And as another aside, I've noticed one of the hugest scams going in the world is the medical profession in this country. And there's got to be, like, for example, Medicare and insurance abuse beyond everybody's belief.
Well,
and I got some good stories about that. I forgot to mention those. Where was I now? We were getting back. Oh, in England. Here's a doctor who was denied a job, fired, couldn't get a job because the government apparently has to approve this, because he would not call a patient who was 6 feet two and had a long beard. He would not refer to her or him or it as madam.
Hmm.
So the doctor refused to refer to this patient as madam and gets fired. Well, if somebody walks in looking like the prototypical mountain man of Western lore.
You're not going to say, hey, toots.
You think you're insulting the person. Yeah. But anyway, this is where it's gotten, this great illusion that there's no difference between people, which is the most absurd thing anybody ever came up with. But remember, all these are delusions. Nothing is graven in stone or anything ideologically, because we're all riding a rock through space. Nobody knows where the rock came from, where it's going, or what the point is. So all we know for damn sure, is that in the universe there is energy, there's vibrations and frequency, and all forms depend on the frequency of the vibrations. Mm-hmm. Now, what does that mean? I don't know, but that seems to be the only thing that we know. Ludwig Wittgenstein, and of course you're aware of Ludwig Wittgenstein, who wrote the very famous Tractatus Logicus Philosophicus, which, well, anyway, anybody? Wittgenstein was considered to be the ultimate philosopher of the last century. I wouldn't expect people to know that particularly. But while sitting on the veranda with my julep, I have little to do but think about things like this. I'm reading his biography now. He said famously at the beginning of his history-making book and the end of it, he had the same line. And he said, whereof one cannot speak, thereof, one should remain silent. Which means if you don't know what you're talking about, sit down and shut up. But we wouldn't be.
Right, that's true. See,
that would eliminate us.
Hey, before we go, I want to ask you, space. 50 years for
the man on the moon.
Where were you? What were you doing when the liftoff of Apollo 11? And where were you when they landed on the moon?
I wasn't watching OJ's slow speed race.
No.
You said you remember that. I want to know exactly where I was and what I was doing. It would take a while. I was working in New York, lived in Connecticut. And I was up at that hour. I think it was very early in the morning when the landing was broadcast. I remember seeing it, sitting there with a bottle of Hennessy's cognac and having a sip. The reason I had the Hennessy's cognac, earlier that evening, the house across the street had caught fire. And we'd been busy trying to get the people out. And the like. So I was in the den in my house after the fire was out and everything with some of the firemen and rescue people and watching the television because everybody wanted to see that. So I remember that one quite well. Okay. How about you?
I was five and a half years old, and I just remember just watching it on TV. My mother probably put me in front of the TV and just watched it. And I just remember the first steps on the moon. That's all I remember. My earliest recollection of any television had to be RFK's funeral in 68. So I was probably about 5 and a half when the moon landing happened.
It was we were kind of into that because my wife at the time, bless her, is not with us, had a first cousin who was an astronaut, Pete Conrad, who was on the moon twice, I think, and was involved in the program. So we, you know, felt we had kind of a closeness to it. Do you remember that? Now, that anniversary is when, or was it?
It's happening this week. The Apollo 11 took off on the 16th, and it landed on the moon tomorrow.
Okay, well, listen, thanks, everybody. Again, we'll see if we can give this another shot. If you have notions, ideas, things that we could bring up, because we're asking you to participate in this, it's kind of like call-in talk radio show. We're trying to be with people who are typing in.
Right.
And it's somewhat experimental, so we'll see if we can get it off the ground. Jim Gearhart, Bob Williams, and you. Thanks.
Gearhart's back.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
From NJ1015.com, this is the new Jim Gearhart Podcast.